Matters. Proudly brought to you by Barfoot and Thompson.
On the show today, we're talking to the fabulous Serena Gibbon, Director of Tenancy Advisory Limited. We're going to find out what is wrong with the property management profession and where Serena thinks it needs to go. Welcome along to Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday. Hope you're starting to get those Easter eggs ready. Easter's just around the corner. Serena, you have a little one. Have you got the Easter bunny sorted yet?
I'm one of those boring moms who's anti-chocolate.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm going to sneak by your house in the middle of the night. The Easter bunny's going to plant something.
No, actually, my household's been inundated with Cadbury cream eggs because I have the lovely pleasure of being married to a Welshman.
Oh. So,
there are actually lots of Easter eggs, but I block it out and I pretend that they don't exist.
Oh, that's brilliant. Now, Serena Gibbon, sorry, said your name wrong in the intro. I've known you all these years and I still got it wrong. That's because I was reading fast. Tell us and tell our listeners a little bit about your own journey that led up to running Tenancy Advisory. Take us back.
Okay.
You've left high school. What does the world look like for a young Serena heading out into it?
Gosh, high school, the world's... Listen, when I was 18 years old, I had such a myopic life. My whole family are doctors. So, I did the same thing. I went to medical school, didn't finish it,
okay.
Realized halfway through that it wasn't for me. So instead, completed my bachelor's and master's in law. And in the course of finishing my master's degree, I stumbled upon this tiny little organization called the Auckland Property Investors Association. I had no interest in property. I knew nothing about investment. I could barely balance my own bank account back then. But I enjoyed the people and I enjoyed the opportunity about building a business. So I ended up running it for over 15 years. And from there, really cut my teeth on the rental sector, I should say, and discovered that I have a genuine love for the sector itself. And these days I run Tenancy Advisory, so it's a multidisciplinary advisory service that advises on tenancy law, but also on communication, branding, business strategy, and future-proofing the industry, basically.
What is it about the tenancy world that excites you so much?
What excites me is how often it touches people's lives, how incredibly relevant and consequential tenancy laws and the policy settings are to
okay.
people's lives, and how quickly it is disregarded or ignored by the broader legal profession.
Okay, now you call yourself a raging lefty. Now, that's your own words. You also make your living advertising property investors and landlords. So how does that work? Do your clients know all of your connections in this space?
I like to think they do. I've always been very, very open about my politics. And look, Stephen, I see this as an advantage, not a liability. I think it's very useful for property managers, for owners, to have someone on their side who can speak the language of tenants, who understands and can empathize with the tenant's point of view. Because fundamentally, if we look at compliance, the RTA, the Residential Tenancies Act, it doesn't care about who you voted for. It just cares about if you comply or not.
Mm.
So I see it as an advantage, and whether that diminishes or elevates my work, I'd say it's up to the market to decide.
Okay, well, because you grew up as, you referred to it as a third culture kid, you know, the appearance of privilege, real insecurity underneath. How did that wire you differently from most people in this industry, do you think?
I think, you know, when you're a third culture kid, you learn two things very, very early on. You learn to read the room and you learn to context switch. And as a result of that, you become naturally a very good translator,
mm-hmm.
not of languages as such, but of culture, intention, purpose, motivation, all that perspective as well. You become a very good translator and a bridge between different worlds and different perspectives because you're, you know, as a child, your survival and your sense of security is derives on that skill. And what I've worked out over the years is turned out I can commercialize this skill, and now I'm in a very privileged position where I get to translate tenancy law with commercial reality and also with human relationships in between. So yeah, that's a unique privilege, and I get to practice it every day.
You've said you spent years deliberately shrinking yourself professionally. Now, that's an interesting statement, playing a caricature to avoid perhaps being a target. So unpack that, and then when did it stop? What broke it for you? Because that's quite a statement to make.
Yeah, in brief, my daughter broke it for me. You know this, Stephen. I have a 2-year-old at home. As I mentioned before, I fell into this property world, and I had no legacy connection. I had no backing. My family knew nothing about property or investments, it's just so unfamiliar to us. I didn't know anybody. I had to sort of figure it all out myself as an outsider, which is how I always see myself, as a third culture kid. And that was fine. But part of the survival instinct, when it kicked in, part of it was to shrink myself, to pretend that I'm someone I'm not, to encourage underestimation so that the incomings are a lot less and a lot less severe. When I became pregnant with my daughter, I had a very successful, happy and healthy pregnancy. I had nothing to worry about. The only thing I worried about as an expecting mother of a daughter, bearing in mind, I mentioned before, my husband is Welsh, was I spent 9 months really troubled by whether my daughter was going to be white enough, whether she was going to be accepted by society instead of being seen as yet another immigrant, because of those features had real consequences in my life. When she came along and I went back to work, I realized my fear wasn't people's perception of her. My fear was her modeling her life on the limitations that I had intentionally put into my life as my way to survive. I didn't want that for her. I didn't want her growing up seeing a mother who deliberately shrunk herself, and be less vocal, less true to herself in order to survive. That's not the life I want for her. So I had to make a change. And in many respects, having the privilege to run tenancy advisory on my own terms, doing what I want to do, saying what I want to say, working with people I want to work with, I see it, it's a love letter for my daughter. That's what this business is about.
That is so cool. Thank you for being so honest about your family. I'm going to ask you another honest question now. You mentioned at the beginning, you know, you grew up in a family where everyone's gone off into the medical side of the world, medical profession.
So interesting, right?
And you started it.
Interesting people.
What does your family think of you going down this tenancy path? Or are they all good doctors who have investment properties and are now very grateful to have sister in the family?
We actually, it's funny that we actually don't talk about it a heck of a lot. Yeah, like I think my father is probably still grappling with exactly what it is I do. And this is the thing, is it's never, you know, our chosen career and our profession and what we achieve out of it was never you're never scored on the bell curve. It's not part of our worth as a family member to deserve a place in that dynamic. So we don't actually talk about it much. I think dad's just like, I'm the youngest of three, and I think my dad's expectation of me is as long as I can look after myself and not harm others, he's good. He's good.
Yeah, and he's probably thinking, I've got enough doctors in the family for my retirement. I'm sorted. Yeah. All right, let's jump to property management now. And you've said property managers are the most undervalued and overworked people in the sector. But a private landlord listening could say, yeah, but I can get it done for 5%, so why should I pay more? Perhaps thinking they can do it themselves. Mm. What's your answer to that landlord?
Well, if you think about a landlord, let's say, I don't know, Stephen, you know this better than me. Let's say an average management fee is, 7.5 to 8%, roughly, let's say, an average rental of $650 a week. We're talking about try to do math in my head really quickly. We're talking about $2,500 to $3,000 of management fee a year. Right. And the context of this is an owner who would have likely spent anything between $30,000 to $45,000 a year just to service that mortgage to own the property. Right. Mm-hmm. So to me, at the end of the day, to quibble over that 5% for it's the same as buying a brand new BMW and then refuse to pay for oil change.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's number one. That's the context of, that's how I see the issue, how I frame it in my head. Number two is, there are two problems there, is property manager's job is not well understood. The value property managers bring to the table, us property managers for the owners, is not well understood. Owners are very much still stuck in a mindset of all of that property managers, all they do is collect rent and
right.
and chuck you a statement once a month
yeah.
and they clip the ticket. You know, no, like everybody hates a middleman, right?
Yeah.
But property managers do so much more than that. So I think a lot more can be done to position and redefining the value of a property manager and letting the owners understand that a good property manager in an unregulated or even regulated market, a good property manager could be the difference between your portfolio being in the tens of millions or just in the millions.
So we spend a lot of time in the property management world basically vetting and interviewing prospective tenants to make sure that they are the right people for a property. You've been quoted as saying we should interview and vet owners before taking them
Absolutely.
On as clients. Now, I think some owners would probably be a bit against that. Tell us why you think that's viable.
Super viable in my point of view. Fundamentally, the driving force behind that position I have is simply that you're, as a property manager, you're jointly and severally liable alongside your landlord within the tenancy jurisdiction.
Right.
So, you know, and this is the thing, is the Herald is not going to care whether landlord John Smith has breached repair maintenance in healthy homes. The landlord is going to, the Herald is going to care whether it's Barford and Thompson, right? So it's, for me, it's very much your brand equity is at stake. And for the sake of $2,000, $3,000 of management fee, you're going to get us an agency in a year. You're telling me you're prepared to let anyone come along onto your books and expose you legally and reputationally. It just blows my mind. Additionally, I do think, you know, the more property managers I talk to, the more I just want to scream into a room and say, do you know what, guys? Your competition is not in this room. It's not, you know, we go to these industry conferences,
yep.
right? And you have room for property managers. It's not about how do you get a bigger piece of the pie. The question now for this industry is this pie can be so much larger because half of the privately owned properties in New Zealand are under self-management, not property management.
Mm.
So until professional property managers take up 95% of their market share, until then, it is not game on. It is figuring out how do we get the legacy owners who grew up watching their parents manage their tenancies and managing it badly and thinking that managing it badly is good enough so they can do it themselves and save that $500, right? Is how do we get those people on board and the right people?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It'd be interesting to throw that out into the industry and see if they would be prepared to fully vet their owners before coming
Absolutely.
On board. I mean, it is, I guess that's that business decision, isn't it? But oh, I'm totally on board. Now, I mentioned vetting tenants at the beginning of that conversation. Where do you think that process is sitting? Are you feeling that that's got a little bit outdated when we look at where sort of the world is today?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's fairly outdated. A lot of the times when I advise on disputes that are either about to go to a tribunal or simmering in the background and looking very, very risky for the property manager, and we unpack and look at, you know, how did that tenancy come to exist in the first place. A recurring theme for me is very weak tenant referencing. So, you know, a lot of this industry is still cruising on what I call a telemarketer script. You pull up a PDF. It is like 10 questions and you ring the property manager who was an ex-landlord and you go, did they pay their rent on time? Do they have a pet? Do they smoke? You know, all those pre-formatted questions that are designed for yes, no answers that tell you nothing more than a normal application would tell you. I think it's you're doing yourself a disservice. You're inviting potentially inviting a fox into the hen house.
But do you think some property management companies have got scared of all the privacy regulations?
And absolutely.
Like there was a period a few years ago where it was you were nervous of what you could and can't answer. And
absolutely.
Like these days, even some of the publicity around what can go on a for rent sign and what cannot. You know,
that's another bone I need to peg somebody with.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, get David Faulkner on here, and we'll lose an hour on that one. But Are we perhaps asking those scripted questions because actually we're a little bit scared to step out of the box now because someone's always ready to use ChatGPT and get a file a complaint and rip us back again?
Yeah, so that's a really good call out, Stephen. And the way I see it, I don't see it as a privacy law restriction. I see it more as an issue of the privacy principles or the privacy laws in New Zealand not being well understood and well implemented in the property management space. I see a lot of mis-signaling by training facilities and leaders in the industry giving property managers the wrong guidance on exactly how to comply with privacy law. The intent of privacy law is never to diminish your ability as an owner or an agent of the owner to find the best tenant that aligns with your business purpose. That's never the intent of the Privacy Act. And as somebody who, you know, I was actively involved in the putting together of the rental sector guidance by the then Privacy Commissioner, I think this is maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, and having seen how the sausages were made from within, I really came to appreciate that what the commissioner had put out as guidance to the rental sector, how quickly it got denatured and distorted by the management industry on its own. And as a result, it makes property managers fearful.
Yeah.
Very unnecessarily. So part of my work and the next part of my goal for 2026 is actually putting out more materials and training opportunities to really change that.
Yeah, great. Change that mindset across the whole industry. Because I guess there is that little bit nervous of what's the person down the road doing? And are we going to step outside our box too much? Look, I do want to push you on one thing. You know, you've been quoted as believing the entire industry has designed its management approach around what would happen at the tribunal instead of perhaps what's the best relationship outcome. That's basically saying property management firms in the country are a little bit backwards. Is that what you mean?
No, I don't mean backwards. I think it's a result of having been fear-mongered for way too long. You know, when I first became more involved with the property management industry, I was alarmed at the number of times I've had to tell experienced practicing property managers that a tribunal decision has no precedence. So that just because one adjudicator said something doesn't mean all the cases are bound therefore onwards by this one decision. So I think there's been a propensity, and I want to say this respectfully, there's been a propensity by legacy education and content providers in this space to oversimplify the way we should be communicating and educating and keeping property managers up to date in this space. So I'll give you an example, Stephen. It's not, you know, and this is by no means a criticism. It's simply, I hope, it simply is a tweak in mindset. You know, you are a married man. Did you get into your marriage expecting to get a divorce and plan for the divorce? Have you got a divorce lawyer on speed dial? Right? Like, it's the mindset thing, right? Like, you get into this relationship, you plan for the best. You plan for it being productive, aligned with your vision, and the both of you thriving. And I think that's... at least I like to think that's how you sustain
definitely.
Marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's the attitude I really want property managers to set. Reintroducing into their professional life, because we all know how to do it.
Mm. Absolutely. Boy, you'd need a whole episode to unpack my divorce. My goodness.
That's
hilarious. She would be. We're best of friends. We laugh. We'd have you going for hours. It'd be a great comedy show. That's hilarious. You said property managers, you know, don't always value themselves. You know, we've got a whole lot listening to this show. How do you teach them to value themselves?
And guys, where do you I think you're great. Yeah.
What do you mean by that? What can we unpack from there?
Look, this whole... Do you agree with me if I say one of the most popular, prevailing and tested sales technique for a property manager in this market continues to be a discounting of fees? Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, it's something that I think I know, or look, I know the company that I work for is trying really hard to not go down that path, but it's really difficult if you're up against someone who's met another company that is pushing that.
Absolutely.
So then where does your value sit?
And as somebody who has deep experience in shrinking herself, the first thing you would do is discount your worth.
Yeah.
And that sets the basis of the power dynamic. Right. And I see property managers as having an incredible opportunity and capacity to elevate themselves into asset value advisory, into positioning themselves as the linchpin of your owner's success. You're not admin, you're not the tea lady, you're not rent collector who's balancing the books every day, because all that sort of stuff, you know what, AI is going to do it way better one day. We're not there yet, but we're marching very quickly towards it. So the way I see it is, how do we change that narrative? It starts from the management industry themselves. It starts from understanding that you guys know so much more than owners. You know so much more about the law. You know so much more about that property than the owners. You know so much more about that tenancy and the potential of that tenancy than the owners, because you're running the show on the ground. So how do you use that information, repackage and position the value you bring to the table, so that you're no longer having that conversation with the owners around, oh, you know, if I discount like 5%, would you come on board? Because I see so many owners getting burnt out because they measure their success by the number of doors on the book. Meanwhile, you're bleeding revenues out the back door, with owners being dissatisfied, they're telling their mates not to come on board with you, they're not paying for repair and maintenance, you're burning hours and hours and hours just to get a healthy home assessment done. It just seems to be, there are a lot of different ways we can architect the relationship and design it to be more balanced and likely to be successful for the property manager. It's not being done, because for so, so long, the owners get to set the terms of the relationship, and we need to change that.
I was once standing next to a property manager who took a phone call, and the person had obviously asked to discount the rate, and she really politely just said, certainly, so which part of my service would you like me to drop off? And there was silence. And she said, would you like me to collect rent every second week? Would you like me to not give you legal advice? And she said, I know my work, and if you want a good investment and well looked after, you need my worth. And exactly what you're saying. Yeah, but it is an industry-wide thing.
It is.
Because you are putting even the best in a difficult situation if everyone around you is trying to discount the fee.
Yeah.
Because times are tough and people are looking at every dollar they spend.
Absolutely. But let's not forget, the context of this is, these are the same owners who can afford to pay five figures every year to service a mortgage. These are the same owners who will willingly fork out $400 an hour on a lawyer, right? Or an accountant. So it's not that they are too cheap to spend. I think that's a superficial observation of what's going on. What's going on is, they don't understand the value you bring to the table, and they're having trouble putting a price tag on it. So even just in my own little practice, I've had to discipline myself to say, I'm never going to discount my rates. I realized when I came into this space, I've set my rate at an outlier space, because I have a particular business goal to have a certain quality of life and work-life balance as a working mom. And also, you know, I back my expertise, I back my knowledge, I back my industry connections, and I back my ability to continue improving myself and stay up to date with the challenges, current or future, that face the industry in a way that I can advise property management companies appropriately. So it's, to me, it's around backing yourself and not negotiating on your pricing power, because the moment you start negotiating is saying to the signal to the owner, especially as a property manager, the signal to the owner is, if you're prepared to discount your price, how can they have confidence that you're not going to discount their rent to the tenants just to get a tenant in there?
Absolutely. Now, compliance is a big part of the property management world, and you're somebody that, that runs, talks, and unpacks a lot of this, and it's certainly what most property managers sell, but you're calling it the tax rung, the floor, not the ceiling. So if I'm a property manager and compliance is sort of 80% of what I'm doing, are you telling me that about 80% of my job is about to become worthless?
Not worthless at all. Not worthless. I am saying that 80% of your job will one day very shortly be automated, and it ought to be automated. And once that day comes, you need to be prepared to move your human capability upstream. So it's around transitioning from an operations service provider that's doing admin heavy work to strategic advisory. That's how I see the industry moving. I'll give you an example, Stephen, because I like throwing around the stats as a bit of a shocker for property managers. Late last year, the Ministry of Housing and Urban Development came out with their annual survey, pulse survey, they call it, for landlords and tenants. And it reported 72% of owners in this space use a property manager because they think a property manager knows more about compliance than they do. Okay, compliance is the reason 72% of your clients on your book decided to go with you rather than manage themselves. And whenever I speak at events and I raise that number, people treat it like a success story. I see it as a canary in the coal mine. I see it as hugely alarming, because if you think about it, as a property investor, nobody I know who owns a rental property ever bought a rental property to comply. That's not the reason. You buy a rental property to have wealth, to have status, to have symbolism. That's why you have a rental property. Compliance is the tax you pay for that privilege. And when you're swimming in the tax realm, that's telling me you're not in the core group of the owner's strategic advisors. You're a cost center. And that means the owner is always going to be incentivized to negotiate you down and replace you with a cheaper service provider or even AI one day. So I just think, you know, short term, if you're strong on compliance, fantastic. You're going to do really, really well, because most owners still will go to you. But long term, if you're building out a business for your 10, 20 years business plan, you got to recognize that this is an alarming number, and you've got to reposition itself so that next year or the year after, when the same survey comes out, what I want to see is 72% of owners saying, I'm going to a property manager because they can elevate the worth of my asset and maximize my property's earning power in any market.
And in many countries, they're not called property managers anymore, they're called investment managers.
Yes.
But our New Zealand rules, I think, makes it a little bit harder for that title to be used here, but that's effectively what we want. You mentioned AI just before, and you run workshops on embracing AI. Be honest, how much of the property manager's role can you see changing or being snapped up in the AI space, or is this still a good component that needs that human interaction?
Definitely good components that need human interaction. The way AI is at the moment, if you want to be a run-of-the-mill, nothing special business that produces expected results and it's not particularly impressive, but you know, the numbers work, you can survive, and you keep playing that volume game of more doors through the onto your books, you know, I don't think you need to pay a lot of attention with AI. You're going to be fine. But it's not terribly exciting as a business owner. If you're a business owner who wants to really reinvent yourself, be an industry, be a leader of industry, and also rebrand the property management profession as strategic asset advisory and business advisory. I don't think AI can do a lot for you right now, because all the AI, depending on, you know, we talked about this before we went live, your ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity, all these platforms, they give you very predictable results. So can it be automated? Yeah, the low-hanging fruit tasks can be automated. In many respects, for those property managers who are already using industry-designed softwares, there's already a lot of AI interfaces going on behind the background. Anyway, so you're already using it. But long-term, I think I see the use of AI through the lens of the more you interact with it, the more you invest in your prompting education, the more you understand what it brings to the table and what it doesn't bring to the table, the risk, the inherent risk of using AI, and how you use the AI generated results to complement with your own judgment, your personality, your ability to manage and sustain relationships. That's where the magic is going to happen for property managers.
And if it's working in the compliance space to make things easier, you know, where do you see that leaving, you know, companies and what they're charging, etc.? Is that something that you feel has to be looked at?
Yeah, I think it absolutely has to be looked at. I was at a conference the other day, completely outside of the space, and it talked about how the profession can, with the advent of AI, this particular profession should rethink the way it charges clients, because it is traditionally charges clients by billable hours. And I think in many respects there's some overlap with the property management industry as well. Is you got to like recalibrate how are your clients going to perceive value and understand value. And if AI is interacting with some of the delivery, then how are you going to capture and define the value in a way that makes billing and monetizing make sense?
But if I go back to your earlier statement around the value add that property managers have, perhaps it's then going, so AI is taking this bit out of my work week, what other values can I add? So is it about how do I grow that investment portfolio for my investor, for my owner, and look at other value adds that they can put in? You talked about the parallel between your own experience of being underestimated and what you see in property managers, but there's a difference. You chose to step up. A lot of property managers we seem to feel in this industry kind of just sit in that undervalued space. Why and what can we do about it, Serena? How can we tell these property managers how awesome they are?
Guys, you're awesome. Mind control. No, I just look. I get so frustrated when I look at this industry as an outsider or bystander, I should say, because you know, Stephen. Do you know what the number one thing people say to me when they come to me for advice? And then invariably we drift into more personal chats. The most common thing clients say to me is, oh my God, I can never do what you do. You're so clever. I'm no more clever than any property manager I've interacted with. I don't know what it is that happened in the course of these mostly ladies and their careers that they're being told that this is not a real career, that this is perhaps a stepping stone for real estate, that perhaps it is a stopgap between motherhood and childcare, that it's just like this pervasive culture of lowering their own self-esteem in relation to anyone, all the other interactions they've had in that space. So I would say this, professional services live and die on information asymmetry. And when you're a property manager, you have so much more information compared to your owner and your tenant. And you need to know how to use that information, firstly, to meet your obligations as under the contract, under the RTA. You meet your obligations under our general agency rules. But also, how do you use that information to advance your own ambitions and your own visions for yourself? And a lot of that could very well be you know, getting your owners who you know want to grow their portfolio but they're stuck, using your professional network to connect them with mortgage advisors, to accountants, to people who can help them grow their portfolio, on the assumption that if they grow their portfolio, you grow your portfolio. So, Ryan, how do you position yourself so that you are growing alongside allies?
Nice. Hope our property managers are listening today. All right, Serena, are you ready? It's time for quick fire round for our last part of the show. You run APIA as a service provider, so it's the Auckland Property Investors Association, where the brand values aren't yours to set. You run tenancy advisory where you can say what you want. Which Serena has showed up today? And what's the thing you can say here that you can't say at APIA, perhaps?
Tenancy advisory all day, every day. can't be, you know, like I said, I'm building this for my daughter, for my daughter's vision of me. So tenancy advisory all day, every day. What I can say here, I can't say in the APIA network is, guys, you gotta respect yourself first before you expect anyone else in this space to value and respect you.
Nice. Okay, 5 years from now, the industry's listened to you. Serena's words got out into everybody's ear. So what will be different and what's gone?
What will be different? I sincerely hope that that when I invariably in 5 years still go back to tertiary education institutions and talk to students of property, of law, of business, that these youngest and brightest of the future aspire to becoming residential property managers.
No.
That's what I want. I want property managers to be incredibly proud of what they do. And when at dinner parties, when people ask them, what's property management? The answer is, it is the linchpin of whether or not you're going to have $1 million portfolio or a tens of million dollars of portfolio. And I'm that person who drives it for owners.
Nice. It's election year this year. If you were sitting in here now and in each seat in the studio was a different leader of the current biggest parties, what would you be asking from them for the next 3 years?
I would love, and I want to be careful because I do have relationships with some of them. Right. I would love for, it wouldn't be an ask, Stephen. It would be a suggestion from a friend. And my suggestion would be, you need to decide. Do you want to be right or do you want to be effective? Because at this moment in time, with the challenges we have endured for over 30 years in New Zealand with housing and rental housing, if I got to choose, I want my leader to be effective.
So is it time for regulation?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
What do you think's holding it back?
Cost of regulation. There's always, you know, tension around what's the cost of providing rental housing for end users, for tenants. So cost is always a big consideration. But, you know, there are a lot of really smart ways to do it without adding layers to the cost of complying to the regulations.
Okay, we've got a minute left and I'm asking you a curly one to finish. We've had pets bonds come in, we've had changes to the bond system, we've had meth regulations changes all in the last little while. What's been the biggest surprise for you from the government?
Biggest surprise from the government is regulation's not here yet. I've been talking about it with two terms government and it's frustrating, but I'm positive that it would eventuate shortly.
And is there any surprises in the meth, pets or bond space that you went, oh, I didn't see that bit coming?
Not so much, but I will say this. I have been surprised at the industry's lack of preparedness for situations where the tenant, you know, tenants are openly being coached to pretend they don't have a pet at application stage, and then a week into the tenancy, they have like a 30-year-old cat, right? So I'm surprised at the lack of preparedness there. But I would say, again, it goes to the heart of, guys, you got to be referencing people right and ask the right questions. Otherwise, why are you referencing people?
Absolutely. How can people get in touch with you? And in a snapshot, what are some of the services you offer to the industry?
I do a lot of education and training events. I do a lot of public speaking. I advise on tenancy matters and business strategy. You can contact me at tenancyadvisory.co.nz. I'm not prepared for that. And yeah, I'm across LinkedIn, social media, everywhere.
Brilliant. Love it. Serena, always love talking to you. Thank you so much for giving up your time. And if anyone that knows Serena wants to join me on Good Friday or Easter Saturday to hide some chocolate around her house for a little one to find, you get in touch. Thanks so much for coming on again. Take care.
Thank you, Stephen.
Catch us next week. We're catching up with Lucia Shaw, who is talking about the investment space between New Zealand and Australia. Have a fabulous week, everyone. We'll catch you next Monday. Take care.